CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I go to South Africa, to Johannesburg. John McDermott is the economist, columnist and correspondent in Africa, reporting on breaking news in South Africa, that critical part of the economy of the whole continent. The former president, Mr. Zuma, is ordered to jail. But, John, a very good evening to you. Thank you for this. What I have is your reporting in The Economist these last days, but the story changes profoundly, moment to moment. I note that CNN is reporting in these last days that there was a gathering at Mr. Zuma's country home, or dacha, as the Russians would say, gathering Zulu leaders who were loyal to him all these years. And there was a remark by one Zulu leader shouted out in this gathering that if Zuma goes to war, Zuma goes to jail, we're going to war. What is Mr. Zuma's risk now about jailing, and why has he been convicted? What are the charges? He was a longtime president of the country. Good evening to you, John.
Good evening, John. Yes, this is a huge week in South Africa, arguably one of the most important weeks since the end of apartheid in 1994. And it all centers around this one man, Jacob Zuma, who was president from 2009 to 2018, when there was vast amounts of corruption, which goes here by the name of state capture. After he stepped down in 2018, there was an inquiry, and it's an ongoing inquiry into the corruption during his reign. And this is where he has begun to get himself into his most recent bout of trouble. He has repeatedly refused to appear before this judge-led inquiry, and they have referred him to the highest court in South Africa, the Constitutional Court, the equivalent of the US Supreme Court. And last week, on June 29th, they sentenced him to 15 months in prison for contempt of court and also for lambasting the judiciary. Now, as you suggested, things get a little bit more complicated because the court said Mr. Zuma had 5 days to hand himself in, and if he did not do so, the police would have a further 3 days to arrest him. And that takes us essentially to midnight tonight, South Africa time. And as I speak to you now, it's still unclear whether the police will go ahead and make that arrest, in part because of the fears that there may be some violence between them and the defenders of Mr. Zuma that have rallied around his homestead in Nkanma, in an area called KwaZulu-Natal. So it's a pivotal moment. It's also a very tense moment here in South Africa.
Cyril Ramaphosa is the present president of South Africa. Does he have a part in this, or is this between the judiciary and Mr. Zuma?
He's not directly involved, but he's clearly an important figure. Cyril Ramaphosa is president of South Africa. He came after Jacob Zuma in 2018. And he was also Nelson Mandela's protege. And he sees his job very much as restoring that 1994 legacy of Mandela. So the legacy of the institutions that he, Cyril Ramaphosa, and Nelson Mandela worked so hard to establish. And he feels like Mr. Zuma, throughout his time as president, but also since then, has done everything in his power to essentially undermine the kind of post-apartheid settlement. And how he has tried to rebuild South Africa since 2018 has been essentially to reimpose the rule of law, appoint good people to these institutions. And you can actually see here that the institutions of South Africa are doing their job. They have decided that no man is above the law, especially not a former president. And they have said that if he is going to hold the judicial system in contempt, then he must go to prison for it. So while Ramaphosa does not have his hands on the judgment, it's very much in keeping with his way of governing. The issue, of course, is that he's not just president of South Africa. He's also president of the ruling party, the African National Congress. So he has to deal with a large faction within the ruling party that still supports Mr. Zuma, that still sees him as a hero. And that faction is especially powerful amongst the Zulus, which is the ethnic group that Mr. Zuma belongs to. So he has been noticeably quiet during the past week, and a lot of people here in South Africa are demanding that the president reassert the primacy of the courts in this context, because at the moment, Mr. Zuma and his supporters are making all the noise.
You report in The Economist that this goes to the centerpiece of South Africa's success or failure, that no man is above the law, as you've said. And you remind us all that under apartheid, many men were above the law, and it mattered influence peddling and where you came from, and as all wonderful cases. Do they inspire South Africa today, where with the worldwide pandemic, it strikes me, John, that this is one bridge too far for a country to put up with, given the fears of the Delta variant?
This is the other major thing that's happening in South Africa right now. I mean, Johannesburg is the hotspot on the entire continent when it comes to COVID. For the first time, really, since the pandemic began, we have India-like scenes, in part because of the Delta variant spreading through the population. And I think for many South Africans, the saga encircling Mr. Zuma is, as you say, kind of one thing too many. A lot of people are scared about the pandemic, they're scared about the health consequences, they're scared about the economic consequences. And while many South Africans are used to the strong and the powerful not getting their comeuppance, I think most South Africans very much hope that the Constitutional Court will steel itself, and that ultimately, whether it's today or in the next few days, he will end up in prison.
Yes, now we go to the complications of charges. He is charged with contempt of court and not appearing for the court. And you report, though, that there is another charge coming up on the 19th of this month, the middle of the month, about his dealing with a French arms maker. I believe it stretches back nearly 20 years, the beginning of this century. But I get confused because of all these charges. So as I understand it, he's to be jailed now pending the trial for state capture, which begins the middle of the month. And he's refusing to acknowledge his present court. We don't know about the July 19th, do we? Or is he denied all those charges as well?
It's hard to keep up. Jacob Zuma has had more escapes than Harry Houdini, but I think it helps to break them down into three separate things. The first is these current charges, which relate to his refusal to appear at the big state inquiry into state capture. There is one more game to play. That's not an appeal. You can't appeal constitutional court verdicts, but it is a request to have the judgment thrown out. Most legal scholars here believe this will fail, and they also believe that the previous instruction for Mr. Zuma to be jailed still applies, so that he should attend this hearing from prison on Monday. So that's the first thing. The second thing is whatever may arise from this state inquiry into state capture, otherwise known as a kind of second Truth and Reconciliation Commission. We don't know what will come out, but there's been ample amount of investigative journalism done by South African reporters on links between Mr. Zuma and an Indian-born family known as the Gupta brothers. We'll park that for a second. The court case he's facing on July 19th is actually something that goes way back to 1999, when Mr. Zuma was deputy president under Thabo Mbeki. He is accused of taking a bribe from a French arms firm in order for them to sell some weaponry to the South African state. This case has obviously been going on for since the charges were first laid, almost two decades. Mr. Zuma, of course, denies the charges, even though his financial advisor went to jail for his part in this saga back in 2005. Mr. Zuma has for many years adopted what is called a kind of Stalingrad legal tactic of delay, delay, defer, not show up, launch technical objections. And you're seeing a bit of that at work in his current legal strategy as well. But They're all separate things. This is a man who spent almost a decade in prison under the apartheid regime. He was in Robben Island with Nelson Mandela, and he has no intention of going back to prison in the post-apartheid regime and is trying his damnedest to stay out of there.
John McDermott for The Economist magazine, reporting from South Africa on Jacob Harry Houdini Zuma. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Truth is, Ohio, when it comes to broccoli salad, you got the secret ingredient on lock. Miracle Whip. You know it. Your neighbors know it. Heck, everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows it. That tangy zip of Miracle Whip is the reason why Ohio's broccoli salad runs circles around everybody else's and never gets winded. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip right where it belongs in all your favorite recipes. Buy Miracle Whip at your local grocery store and get your tang on, Ohio.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.